There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Friday, hour number two of the show. As I mentioned before we went to the news break, good to get this man back on. Obviously, it is a lot later for him where he is, as he's calling us into the evening. Dr. Joe Savage, Roads of Hope, and roadsofhope.org. You can check out online. We'll talk more about that. You are in Moldova right now, am I correct?
I am in southern Moldova. We're coming from the Ukrainian border right now, and we're late coming back. It is a bumpy, if you took the bumpiest road on the planet, that's what we're driving down right now.
Like Ann Street.
And
Ann Street and Mobile,
back to the capital city.
Yeah. So, okay, so you were, so today you were on the Moldovan-Ukrainian border.
Yeah, the southern part, which we're, you know, we've been feeding since day one here, mm-hmm. and we have people here every, not every day, but many days, and so it's nice to come and be a part of this operation firsthand, see it firsthand, see, you know, these precious families that are literally, they come across the border with a suitcase in their hands, tears in their eyes, you know, some with little tiny children. Today was exceptionally cold for this time of year, and it was raining. So you have people that were wet, cold, with a suitcase, fleeing their homes and leaving it behind, all because of a thug sitting in Moscow. It's sick, Sean. It's absolutely sick. It should never be allowed, and should have been dealt with in 2014 when there was a different, you know. But the United States didn't take care of business then, and that always catches up to you.
Now, as you see these people coming across, it is, you know, I've watched the videos of it, and it's moved me to tears. I can't imagine being there in the real world and seeing those people, knowing that dad or grandfather or brother is left behind defending his country, and then there goes mom or grandma and the children with. But how do they know if they'll ever see that person again? I'm not trying to dramatize it too much, but I don't think I am.
You're not dramatizing it at all, and that's. You know, that's the reality. I think we watch too much TV, too many TV shows or movies where, you know, we get just kind of desensitized to it all. But the reality is, I mean, this is real life. And these people, most Ukrainians, like right now, Sean, the people who primarily are coming across, they're not wealthy. You know, they're everyday people. And Ukraine is not a wealthy nation. Now, there's some exceptionally wealthy people that live there. But they're just everyday people coming across, leaving everything they've ever worked for. That's problem number one. Problem number two, they don't know if they're going to ever get to go back to it. Number three, many of them are absolutely traumatized because they're coming from places like that we're hearing on the news, like Mykolaiv. And, you know, of course, Odessa now is getting kind of starting to be squeezed a little bit. And Mariupol and those kind of places. I mean, for instance, one lady... she's sitting there, and she was totally traumatized and shaking, just shaking all over because she had just come through, what was it? I believe my memory's right. It's like a kilometer of dead bodies and body parts. I mean, this isn't a Hollywood script. This is real life. Those are people's family members laying on the road, dead, bloodied up, and blown to pieces. And this poor lady has to drive through that, and another poor lady is... lost a husband or, you know, grandfather or a son, whatever it may be. And, you know, not to mention the women. I mean, these people that's fighting for Russia are hirelings, and they're coming across just like it was in Bucha, the ones coming across Mariupol. You know, they go and recruit these people out of prisons and simply say, okay, you're a rapist, you're a murderer. Would you rather sit in prison or you want to go plunder and rape and do what you want to do? Well, of course, they're going to be like, yeah, that sounds good to me. That's how come you're having the rapes occur and this just horrible things that's happening to girls and young women and even older women, for that matter, and families, because these are evil, evil people. We have to call it what it is. This is not a political thing. This is good against evil. And anytime somebody wants to come in and take somebody else's family and rape them and steal from them and do all of that, that's evil.
Indeed it is. Talking to Dr. Joe Savage, Roads of Hope, somebody who's been working in that region a long time and is there now at the Moldovan-Ukrainian border. You had sent me a picture earlier in the week that you got to spend time with a soldier that just had come out of Mykolaiv. His description to you, you said he was front line. What did he have to tell you?
Yeah, it was interesting, Sean, in that this guy's a Ukrainian-Canadian, so his family immigrated to Canada when he was 13, real tall boy, athletic. And so he initially went to back to Ukraine because he was signing a soccer contract to play for the team that's in Odessa. He's a goalie. So he gets there. They're getting ready to kick off their season. And instead, you know, the war breaks out and there's not going to be a soccer season. So he has changed his cleats for a pair of military boots. He had been in the Canadian Army, you know, for some training, but he'd never seen combat. And so initially he was up in Lviv, and when the missiles attacked early on, that hit one dorm over from him. And then ultimately he was sent to a few other cities and then ended up down here at Mykolaiv and got there. And I don't remember the number, but it was something like, I think it was like 8 out of 22 or 24 or something were dead. I mean, 8 were still alive. The rest of them were dead. And you know, he was talking about like their caravan were going along and all of a sudden the missile comes from nowhere. But his words were this, and this is really a reflection. I don't want to spend much time talking about it because there's too many other good things we can talk about. But he said, how can we take on missiles that's being shot from the Black Sea with an AK-47?
Yeah.
How come these guys, and the other thing he said, look, the media's not reporting it totally correct. I mean, yes, a lot of Russians are dying, he said, but there's a lot of Ukrainians that are dying. I'm talking about soldiers.
Yeah, and they said that yesterday. They, you know, they in this talk about in the Donbass, which I think gave merit to what the Ukrainian foreign minister said. He said, we have lost a lot of people. We believe we are inflicting bigger damages, casualties on the Russians, but we have taken very significant losses. So, I mean, that it felt like there's, you know, it wasn't just a propaganda piece. There was truth to that.
You're right. And there's, of course, there's going to be propaganda because you want to confuse the enemy along the way. But you know, this guy, for instance, so when we start beginning to talk to him, we're at the airport. We just come in, and we just began to dialogue with him, and he was getting ready to go back to Canada. He had to go back for some kind of visa paperwork, and then he was returning. And anyway, he's laying there. He told us the story. He was laying there because he was going to spend the night in the airport, and I'm like, well, you okay? Can I buy you dinner? You know, anything like that. He was like, no, I'm fine. He said, you know, this is way better than where I've been. I'm like, yeah, I bet. We talked about living conditions and how that worked. And anyway, he said that he was laying there earlier in the evening and asleep, and we're having a lot of rain over here right now, and so the thunder boomed outside. And when the thunder boomed, he jumped off the couch and jumped on the floor of the airport restaurant, you know?
Wow.
And, of course, because that's what he's been doing for weeks now, and he said to these people, come over, and was like, you okay? You know, what's wrong with you? You okay? Well, I mean, what's wrong with him?
He's taking cover, yeah.
Blasted left and right, yeah. And so, you know, that's the piece we also have to remember. People that don't get bloodied up and shot or wounded, well, their minds are going to be wounded because they've seen things that, you know, and went through these things, and they've got to deal with a lot of that. And we're talking about, John, not just a nation of soldiers that's going to be traumatized and have to deal with their mental health, you know, that we focus so much on in the United States right now. I mean, you're talking about citizens. We're talking about little children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a story maybe we can talk about later on in the show of where they, you know, these children, I was with them yesterday, they were orphans, and they had been, you know, the missiles kept getting closer and the children were crying and crying and crying. That's why they finally got them out. I mean, those children are going to have to deal with that for a long time.
Forever, you know. Possibly. Forever.
Yeah.
As you know, this is, we've talked about what y'all have done with Roads of Hope and been doing that work for a long time in that region. So this is not new, but the situation is new. I imagine the volume of people, you talk about feeding people on the border and sheltering people as they're leaving these refugees. Do you have any kind of idea what the volume increase in what y'all's work has been? Is it at what exponential rate?
Well, I mean, we went from 7 children's homes to 47 in 24 hours.
Wow.
You know, that's one. And then so we went from never feeding anyone on the border to feeding people, to transporting people, to housing people. And, you know, we're the first NGO on the ground, American NGO, nonprofit is what NGO would mean. We were the first ones on the ground because we were already here. In both countries and been here for a while doing, you know, as I said earlier, work with orphans and anti-trafficking and that sort of thing. And so now, you know, here comes these people. Well, what do you do? And so we've got so many partners. Right now in my car, we've got a rental car. I mean, literally right now sitting behind me is a local pastor who has opened his church doors, and they've had a steady flow. I think he said they get like 45 arriving tonight. And these people are worn out. That's the other thing. Our volunteers and people like him that's sitting behind me right now, Pastor Alex, he is exhausted. His eyes are exhausted. He's celebrating his 40th birthday, and he's riding with me and just came across the border and helped some handicapped lady get across. And I mean, it's every day. It's absolutely every day. And so, but I'm so proud, Sean. I mean, two things, and we've pointed this out in the previous shows. Think about this. I'm from Mobile, Alabama, living in you know, right over there by Fairhope, Savage Family, Graveland Mobile, you know, my brother's field, and it's this little nonprofit, but yet, I mean, we've had almost 2,000 people, 2,000 refugees come through our refugee center. That's just the one we're affiliated with, not to mention these others, and we need to call what's truth is truth. You know, the embassy. We were having breakfast. One of our guys was having breakfast with an embassy guy, and he said, or somebody from over there, and they said, we hear the churches aren't doing much. Are you serious? The churches are the ones doing everything over here right now, not just here, but in Ukraine. We need to, you know, I'm so sick of people saying that, you know, giving the church overall a black eye. And Sean, I know this isn't a spiritual show, and I'm not making this spiritual. I'm just telling you the facts. The churches, the evangelicals in both countries are running food. I mean, I've got a lime green van. People can get on my Facebook page and see this lime green van. They put on bulletproof jackets in East Ukraine every day. They get together. They pray. We're paying for them to get food. We bought this van for them. Some other people are helping too, of course. And so they get together, pray, put on bulletproof jackets, and carry food into a war zone to senior adults, orphans, special needs people who can't leave. You want to talk about a hero? Those people are phenomenal. And they're doing it every day because they feel motivated that God wants them to do it and serve other people. These people need to be applauded for what they are. And in the meantime, I'm going to call it like it is. I'm getting fired up now. You know, I don't care. I just came from the refugee camp of the UN. Okay, all these tents, not one refugee sitting there, Sean. Not one. Where's all that money going? That's my question. Where's the money going?
So y'all have 47.
32 tents. Not one refugee in the whole thing.
So y'all have Roads of Hope, Alabama-based group here helping has 47 homes open there. And the UN camp, the United Nations camp, is empty.
This is so cool. And
it's a shame. Mobilians
can be so proud. People on the Gulf Coast, Pensacola. We're running this camp with fishes and loaves. I mean, every day we pray, God provide for us. And I don't know where the people just keep giving. There's so many people in Mobile and Pensacola and Bowen County's been giving. I don't even know y'all. If you're listening, y'all are awesome. You really are. Thank you so much. Because these people wouldn't be eating if it wasn't for people in Mobile and Bowen County giving. I'm telling you, Sean, they would not have food. They wouldn't have warm shoes. They wouldn't have socks. They wouldn't have a pillow to sleep on. But these people are just over here have been heroes. But the people in Mobile and Bowen County that keep giving, because you keep putting me on the air for some reason, I get all fired up about this stuff. But people keep giving.
Because I love
giving.
You. I love you, Joe. And that's why.
It's so good, man. I can't thank everybody enough. Because these people, these old women and young women and babies, we We walked into a house yesterday that we're that no billions are paying for, and it had, I think it was 32 refugees in it. It was all young mothers and their children. Most of them were real small, and they knew who I was, right? I mean, they know.
Right.
And we walk in, and these Ukrainian women who went in that kitchen, and you're talking about a spread. It looked like a cruise ship's food. The food was cut so perfect, strawberries and all. And they just wanted to serve us, and they just sat there and gave us all this food. They didn't have to do that, but they want to. And really, those special cut strawberries and that food and all, maybe I'll post those pictures. It won't be tonight because I won't get back in time. I'll post those tomorrow, though. I want people to see, you know, because those strawberries are a reflection of Mobile. You bought those strawberries. I didn't. John, you're the ones that promoted, and people bought that food to serve these people every day and socks every day. And it's so cool, man. It's unbelievable. And Mobile and Baldwin County is almost doing the whole thing, while the U.N., with all their money and their beautiful blue color, is sitting there over there with a 35 tent and not one person sitting there.
We're going to come right back talking more with Dr. Joe Savage. And as we go, the news, roadsofhope.org is the website where y'all have given and given and given. You hear what's happening there in Moldova and Ukraine, how that money's being applied. We'll continue to talk about this and the situation with Transnistria as well that Joe Savage has talked to us before about. He'll fill us in when we return right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for the text. Matt saying, Matt, you're preaching here. Listening to this right here makes all of our problems on this side of the pond seem so petty. My hat's off to Dr. Savage and his coalition. Matt, I second that. And that's one of the things, as an NGO, y'all have been there. Y'all know, you know the ropes, and you have the connections, like the pastor that's riding with you and everybody else to help. Also, you know the ropes geopolitically. You've been talking with us, Joe, about Transnistria since you and I started talking. You said, hey, watch this. There's a Russian enclave right here between Moldova and Ukraine, and that's made the news now.
I could tell you some more news, but we won't go there necessarily unless you want to. I was just literally 24 kilometers or less from Transnistria.
What is that? For people who didn't hear us talk before,
I've been through there several times, but there's some weird things going on. There's some weird things going on in the city. You can feel there's a Russian presence. Where you feel like, as we do down in Alabama, you just, those of us who are from there, you know a storm's kind of starting to brew, and you just know it's coming. This is where we are right now. You just sense it. You feel it. You know it's in the air.
There's Russian troops there right now. Is that correct, Dr. Sam?
Yeah, the Russians are here. Here's one.
On the west side of Ukraine.
You can go to Fox.com over here on the website, like Wi-Fi on your phone right now.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go to, like, New York Jets, like I've done, right? Let me go see what the Jets are doing, because Phil's doing the draft last night, which is so cool. They had a Ukraine flag in the war room. But, so you go to Fox and you go to football, you can do it. You go click on Zelensky or an article about Ukraine, it says access denied.
So that
means that the Russians are controlling even the Wi-Fi in this country right now.
Holy cow. And for people to understand this, this is a Russian enclave. Russian troops are present on the west side of Ukraine and not far from Odessa.
We're really close. I mean, in my baseball days when I played out at UMS or Mobile, I probably could throw a baseball and hit the highway. Ukraine was so close to where we were today, right? Certainly, on a good day of a golf swing, I could have hit the highway. That's how close we were, of course. But we've got food that's been going in. And like I said, we've got all that food in operation going on the east side of Ukraine. But, Sean, let me tell you a funny one, because I need a little humor right now. As I would have gone in today, and I know she's listening, but my mama said to me before I left, she said, you're not going to Ukraine, are you? And my brother, he called me, he said, just tell him you're not going to Ukraine. Even if you are, you better tell him you're not going to Ukraine. And we laughed about it. I said, no, I'm not going to go to Ukraine. And I tell you what, as I was saying goodbye and hugged her neck, 80 years old, just had her birthday, and she looked at me, with a little tear in her eye, and she said, promise me you're not going to Ukraine. And I had to look at my mom and promise. And she may be 80 and I may be 50. I ain't lying to mama. You know what I'm saying?
Right, I do. I do. But you got close.
Well, I didn't go in. I could have today.
But you got close. All right, let's do this. We're up against a break. We're coming right back. But remind folks, too, like I mentioned, the website, roadsofhope.org. People want to donate. Is that the best way to go through, or where would you have them go? Through the Facebook, or what's best?
Yeah, they can go to roadsofhope.org. You know, some people might want to write a check. I'll need to get that address so I don't mess it up and have a check being sent to Tokyo or something.
Right. Well,
so
I'll make sure we have it here.
During the break, and we can read that out. And in the morning, I'm doing a live video because I got to sign up for it. I'm going to be sharing about some real things and showing some pictures that's never been seen before. That's in the morning, but we need them to sign up.
Let's do that when we get back. We'll tell them how to sign up when we get back because music's playing now, but we're coming right back. More with Dr. Joe Savage, Roads of Hope. He is in Moldova, right there where the people need the help the most, where they've been for so very long. Be right back. News is next. At 135 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Continue our conversation with Dr. Joe Savage of RoadsOfHope.org in a second. I want to talk to my buddy Angelo right now at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry, where a week from today we'll be doing the show hanging out with Angelo. Hey, man.
Hey, man. I'm looking forward to it, dude.
Me too. As we get ready for the Mother's Day squeeze, make sure you get those gifts bought. What's hot right now? I mean, are people precious metals still a hot item?
Precious metals are still really hot. Gold and silver have both dipped just a little bit. Our inventory is still good, so people have been coming in, checking out the prices, checking out the selection, and picking everything up from 10-ounce silver bars to some of the cool pop culture pieces we've got. Even been selling some of the engravable pieces. People are prepping, getting ahead of Mother's Day by getting stuff engraved now.
All right. Y'all don't be like Angelo and I. Don't procrastinate. Get it done. But if not, we'll see you next Friday. Remind folks how to find y'all in the real world and how to find you online. And the radio show.
There you go. In the real world, 2204 Government Street, Midtown Mobile. Online, mobilebaycoins.com. You can also like and follow us on Instagram and on Facebook. You can also check out the radio show, Two Guys and Some Change, every Tuesday night, right here on FM Talk 106.5 from 6 to 7 p.m. If you miss it there, it's also out there as a podcast, so check it out. Two Guys and Some Change.
All right, Angelo, look forward to seeing you in person next week.
Looking forward to it, buddy.
There he is. Angelo checking in from Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Continue our conversation with Joe Savage, Roads of Hope, which we wrote this down during the break, Joe. So if people wanted to mail checks, is those people that aren't doing the website or doing it that way, which that's what it's very easy, y'all. But if you want to do checks, you said you got a P.O. Box. If I get this wrong, correct me. P.O. Box 3040, Pensacola, Florida, 32516. Is that right?
Yep, that's exactly right. And we're based in Baldwin County, but we process everything in Pensacola. So that's how that works.
And that's what's amazing, y'all. As we hear what Roads of Hope is doing in Moldova, what they're doing with Ukrainian refugees, what they're doing in the region, this is us. This is local folks making these donations, making this the lime green bus that's making those donations in the east. That's homeboys and homegirls right around here making that happen. Talk to us, too, because what y'all have always done is dealing with children and families. And you said you're dealing with a family of 15 kids that you're trying to get out to come to Alabama, right? And I don't even want to try to say it because you texted me this. You tell folks this situation because it's got my blood boiling. I mean, seriously.
Well, overly boiling yesterday, and so the short of it is, you know, all these different families are trying to find places to go. They got to go somewhere across Europe. Some Ukrainians were trying to go down to Mexico, and let me be very, very clear. There is it's too detailed, and I don't know enough about it legally, but I do know this. There is a legal way for people to come across Mexico, okay, that were from Ukraine. And so they were doing that. And then I know last week President Biden came out with a new way of doing it. And they're going to basically streamline it. It's basically using the same model that's being used in Europe right now. And so families can come, especially if you have a sponsor, someone that's willing to pay and cover your expenses for 1 to 2 years. Now, these people, these Ukrainians, the idea is not for them to come and stay. It is to come and have a safe place to live. That's being sponsored by a church, a family,
you know, an organization, what have you, for 1 to 2 years, and then they return. Now, I know what most listeners would think, as I would if I were listening right now. Well, okay, yeah, they're going to come from Ukraine to America, and they're going to go back. Well, for instance, yesterday I was in with a couple, and he does not want to leave his home. He said, "That's where I'm from. That's my home." And most Ukrainians are like this. There's a lot of pride they have, and that, you know, they want to stay where they are. So they're looking for temporary housing. And so this particular family, for instance, has a church or a group of churches in Andalusia that wants to sponsor them, pay for all of their expenses. So there's not one penny that's going to go on the U.S. taxpayer for them to come. It's that church's responsibility, and they're willing to take them in. There's nine, let me get the numbers right. There's nine orphan children, three biological children, and the lady was due yesterday.
Wow.
Okay, so she's sitting there. I'm thinking, I hope she'll have the baby while I'm sitting here. And so, and that, so with the husband and the wife, or the mom and dad, that's 15. So Ukraine said, hey, take the kids and get out. You can go anywhere you want. Just you're responsible for them, for these foster children. So these orphan children. So they end up in North Moldova. We were asked to go and visit with them and talk to them about coming to America. I got there and sat down with them. The lady, you could see the grief in their eyes. They've lost their jobs. So they don't have enough money to pay for anything. They don't know where to go. They don't speak the language. But they got 50, they got these 13 children sitting there, and precious little tiny kids. I'll post a picture of that too, of myself with them. Well, Sean, as we're talking, right, I'm answering questions for them. I'm like, what is your big concern? The biggest concern the mother had, this pregnant mom who's about to give birth, was twofold. She goes, one, I want these children to continue their education. I'm like, well, how do they do that? And she goes, because the teachers in Ukraine are still teaching, they're just doing it online now.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, what? But the lady couldn't buy computers because she didn't have money, and the money she had on this card in Moldova, they wouldn't take it because of Ukrainian currency. So we turned around. I say we literally, me, you, Sean, and Roads of Hope, and the people who've been giving, right, from the area, the Gulf Coast. I said, you know what? We're going to solve this for you. How many computers do you need? She said two. I said, if we buy two computers, you can get those kids back online so they can learn from these dedicated teachers. She goes, yes. I said, okay, so we'll buy two computers. Done. And we bought two computers yesterday. So then I said, so what's your next concern? This is the biggie. This is what we're going to get fired up on.
Mm-hmm.
She goes, I'm concerned because U.S. Immigration is telling me all the children, if they're over the age of three, have to have a COVID vaccine. I said, whoa, wait a minute. What now? She goes, they have said, well, we went and checked it out yesterday to validate that she was correct. The U.S. immigration is requiring three and four and five-year-old little tiny orphan children who's with this family to get a COVID vaccine to come to the United States on a temporary basis.
Fleeing a war zone. Fleeing a war zone where missiles and bullets are flying, and they got to make sure, our department's got to make sure they have a COVID vaccine before they can leave the place where they're in physical danger.
Let's put it in perspective, okay? And I'm going to try not to get fired up because I get too fired up. Is this. Let's say somebody down the street is having a gun. I mean, just somebody's coming in, and these innocent children are there. They're orphans. And they come in with a gun, and they're shooting all over the house. And the kids are crying, and the foster mom and dad scoop up the children, and they run down the street. And then you just need a place to run into temporarily. And the people of that house say, no. Hey, you know what? We're so sorry. We want you. But have you had the COVID vaccine? Has the little four-year-old had the COVID vaccine yet? I mean, are these people?
We can't let you in the house. The bad guy's out there, but we got to have your vaccination card.
No way God has made anybody this stupid.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
So right there, let me tell you about our congressman, okay? I'm sitting in this house at 7 a.m. in Mobile, and I got so fired up, I said, I will see what I can do right now. And I texted Jerry Carl. He's a friend, Congressman Carl, and Jerry called me back. Phone rings. I said, Jerry, I'm sitting in this
with this Ukrainian family right now, 15 children, blah, blah, blah. He goes, okay. And I said, they are requiring the little tiny children to get the COVID vaccine. And then I went off to Jerry, you know. I mean,
unbelievable.
And he turns around and he says, I said, I know you can't probably do much, but he goes, no, I can do some things. But as soon as I get off, I will work on this. And we've been communicating yesterday. But his hands are tied because of the politics, you know. What can he do other than just keep hitting the you know, talking about it, trying to make it work? And so I told him, I said, well, I don't care. I'm ready to fight somebody. I guess it's the savage in me because I'm going to defend the orphan. And if a vaccine for a four-year-old is required, then this is absolutely sick. Get over the bureaucracy, D.C. Get some common sense and let a little four-year-old girl come and be loved on and cared by and fed by this church in Andalusia, Alabama. It's not going to cost a single taxpayer dollar.
Unbelievable.
I will go over, get on the plane with them, and help them get to the United States. And the lady goes, well, I hear that people in Alabama don't like immigrants. Will they maybe cause trouble with us and the children? I said, let me tell you. I said, we're against illegal immigration, not legal immigration.
Well said.
You guys are coming legally. We will welcome you and love you and care for you, and we want you. But if you're illegal, then no. And by the way, how come you can go to other places across the southern border without a COVID? I have to have a COVID test to get back in the United States. I do.
Unbelievable. Listen, we are...
Oh, it's sick, man.
Well, listen, we're going to turn the heat up.
What we can do about other than vote these idiots out.
Yep.
But even with that, we got to call a spade a spade. I'm going to use a new term today. They always call us phobic. You know, we're this phobia, that phobia, the whatever phobia. Let's a new term as a conservative against these people. I have a new term. They're orphan phobic. They're scared of a four-year-old orphan. Think about this. They are more scared of a four-year-old orphan coming to the United States that they're requiring a COVID test than they are the cartel bringing drugs to kill people across the Mexican border. Who's the phobic here? Who's got phobia? They have orphan phobia. That's what they have, orphan phobia.
We're quoting that. And with that, we will talk again next week and keep us up to date. People, once again, want to make donations or go online to follow you. How do they do it?
Man, go to roadsofhope.org or go to the website, get the P.O. Box over in Pensacola, or give on Facebook. Go like me on Facebook. I'm on there. Look at our stuff. Watch our stuff. And then tomorrow night, I'm live down there in Mobile. I will be live talking about things and showing pictures and so forth. I don't know how you sign up. I guess you go to roadsofhope.org, but I'll make sure something gets sent, or they can just get in touch with me, joe@roadsofhope.org, and shoot me an email, and I'll respond here tonight. But Mobile, thank you so very much. You're a hero. Sean, you're a hero. I love you, man. Thank you so much. And let's pray this thing through and help as many people as we possibly can. And let's get the four-year-old orphan to Alabama.
Well said. Godspeed, Joe, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, man.
All right. Dr. Joe Savage, Roads of Hope. We'll put those links up as well on our social media feeds. You can find them there. Coming right back, Tiffany Ray from Taylor Martino Rowan joins me.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here and good to see Tiffany Ray with Taylor Martino Rowan back in studio. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so we're gonna do a little reverse here. If y'all didn't hear Tiffany last time, you are an attorney with Taylor Martino Rowan. You are also a recovering journalist?
That's a way to put it, yeah.
let's talk about it, because it's amazing when I get to talk to folks with Taylor Martino Rowan. It's like all attorneys, but then you'll have your super friend's powers, you know, that this person does this and this person. So you had a career in journalism.
I did. And it's given me a chance to contribute something right off the bat. I'm one of the newer members of the team. And so I can use my journalism skills, my background in researching a topic and writing a lot on deadline, and put that to work with our legal team.
Right. Because this is a key for people to understand that aren't on your side of it, that writing is a big deal. People will think about, okay, the courtroom and all that goes on. But let's talk about what happens in the case beforehand. A legal brief. I mean, what is that?
Well, first, probably a lot of people know most cases never go to trial in the first place.
That's not what they show us on TV.
Well, that's the exciting part.
Right.
My writing bit, I guess, happens behind the scenes, and it wouldn't be very exciting television. Once you bring your case to court and you make these legal claims, you really have to show that you have a viable claim and get through some hurdles before you have a chance to take your case in front of a jury. So, for example, once you bring your claim, the other side could file a motion. There's a few different types, and they will try to get rid of some of your claims or maybe the whole case and make some legal arguments. And then you have to respond to that. And that's the brief that you're writing. And so a lot of cases are really won and lost on paper that way. So it's important that you make your case strongly in those motions and to the court so you can get past those hurdles and take your case.
So if this is not written properly and this back and forth is not done in writing properly, you may never see your day in court. You may never see a jury.
Yes, that's possible.
So from going through this, and I guess for a journalist, it's maybe easier than, butchers, bakers, and candlestick makers, but you're making an argument here, laying out facts, right? I mean, what are the facts?
The facts and the law. You know, each person that comes in the door, each client has their own unique story, their own unique circumstances, issues, and it's our job to know those and to apply them to the law and to figure out what viable legal claims there may be.
So, because if I come in, Tiffany, and say, I was hurt by somebody doing this, that, or the other, then you're taking that and putting it in legalese, right? Or finding the law that says it's wrong that I was hurt.
Yes, yes. The law, the intention of the law, of course, is to give you those protections, to say, these are your legal rights, these are the obligations of people, and when we have violated those create legal actions.
Okay, so you are taking what we will speak of as just like, all I know is I was hurt and the truck did this or the whatever happened here, the product did this. And then you know that equals, here's the best law to apply here.
Yes, that's our job to figure that out. You know, basically, here's the issue, here's the problem, what was done wrong. And then the question is, what's the law that says that was wrong?
It's super important that the right law is applied, that you go to the right law and write that in that brief.
Sure, sure. It's a legal claim. It's a lawsuit.
Yeah, and but a lot of people will think they'll jump from this idea of that I've been hurt or I've been harmed, and then there's that court thing they see on TV. And this part of it that is so crucial, it's great to learn about.
Sure. There's a lot that happens in between, and it's not something that you see in the media, I guess. Yes. But a lot of it happens behind the scenes, the research and the writing. And that's where I get to come in. And I really enjoy that.
I've noticed in our conversations, you really do enjoy it. I mean, you're in the right job. There's a right job for all of us out there, and you have found your place.
Yeah, I'm a nerd from way back, so it suits me. One of the partners in the firm, Steve Martino, he refers to me as a lawyer's lawyer.
Okay.
And I think what he means by that is I like to sort of be the person looking at the issues and digging into the weeds and maybe pointing out legal arguments or potential issues or
that's super important, because that's why we're going to get right. I mean, that's the argument to, hey, take this case. We have a right to come to court.
I suppose so.
Yeah. I mean, it's done. And I want to talk about this as well, because this idea of the process, because for most people, you know, you see them after the worst day in their life, right? You know, this process of going through this, they come to Taylor Martino Rowan. They come, they meet, they say, in my language, regularly, like, this is what happened to me. And that starts this process. But then you're on board. Here are the attorneys at Taylor Martino. All of y'all are on board working on this. This thing about, I've read about this with the big firms that are out there. They'll have these caseworkers. They're like, well, you're not, you know, it's not the attorney, but we're going to assign you a caseworker. Is that, I mean, what does the caseworker do?
Well, to be honest, I can't speak to that. We don't have anybody like that in our firm. We have us, the attorneys. We okay. have paralegals and legal assistants. We don't have anybody that fills that function. We do the
so you
work
have
ourselves.
Attorneys and paralegals working on these things, not caseworkers.
Sure. Yes.
I want to go back through this process here of writing these out. As you write the, are you writing, because you said, Steve Vartito likes to say you're a lawyer's lawyer. So you're writing language that I guess makes sense to lawyers, but also, I mean, you got to, this ends up going in front of the judge too, right? So, I mean, you got to think about the judge looking at this.
Yes. It's, you're writing for the judge at that point because it's.
Do you know, I mean, do you have an idea of what, I mean, you have to after you know what they, how they want to see it. You know, just think about being in school, right? To some level, this professor wants to see it this way and this way and this way. Does that kind of play into it? Like knowing what, how you need to line this up?
Well, I guess I'd say, you know, being a journalist, you always are writing for an audience.
Yes.
And you have to keep that in mind. Who are you writing for? How much background information do they have?
Mm-hmm.
So I think in general, it's always a good assumption to lay everything out as clearly as possible, because you want people, you don't want to make it hard for people,
right?
For anyone to know the argument that you're trying to make and to understand the issues and know the facts behind the issues.
Just joining us, talking to Tiffany Ray from Taylor Martino Rowan. What about this? Talk to people directly. You're writing for an audience. Now talk to an audience that they've had an injury, or somebody they love has had an injury, and they are reticent to do anything about it, right? They feel like, I don't feel like suing somebody. I don't feel like getting an attorney, but their lives are, you know, you talk to these people and they're limited in their ability to make money, to provide for their children. I mean, what do you say to them? Just like you and I are sitting down talking. What do you tell those folks? Why should they come see an attorney?
Well, I would tell them that, first of all, the decision is always theirs. It's always in their power to determine what they want to do and not to do.
Right.
But it's always a good idea to have all the information in your hands before you make decisions.
Is that a thing where people could come in and talk to y'all at Taylor Martino Rowan and just say, hey, I just want to tell you what happened. I'm not saying I'm going to do anything. I just want to tell you what happened. And then y'all will listen to them?
Yes, absolutely.
So it's almost like, if somebody just wants to see, you know, they have this injury, this thing happened to them, y'all are ready to listen to them.
Yes, we're ready to listen.
So, Tiffany, talk to me about people that have had something happen to them, some injury, something has happened to them from somebody else, and they just want to talk about this and see where they are. What do they do?
Well, they can just give us a call. We're online and we're easy to find. And, of course, there's no charge for calling and talking to us.
Well, because I hear people talking about, it's free. But so how does it actually work?
Well, it's free for the individual who comes to us with the problem.
Okay.
We tend to work typically on a contingency basis, which means that we recover only if you recover.
Okay.
And we will recover a percentage of that. So if you take a case to court and you don't recover anything, then there's
don't
no
you anything.
Cost. Yes.
All right. So let's talk about that. Let's get folks in to just tell you their story. Talk about what's happened. Once again, to get in touch with you, find you all online is best.
Mm-hmm. Just Google Taylor Martino Rowan and you will find us online.
Tiffany Wright, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
No representation is made that legal services performed are greater than the quality of legal services of others.